Let's take a trip down memory lane with Niagara County's Great History Show.
Good morning. Welcome to Niagara County's Great History Show. In studio this morning, the Executive Director of the Niagara County Historical Society, Melissa Dunlap, and the Assistant Director, Anne Marie Lineberry. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Good morning.
I figured when you told me what the topic was this morning, the only way to open the show is with John Carpenter.
Yep.
And both of you are familiar with the movie Halloween, I'm assuming.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Well,
scary movies scare me.
Yeah, they have a tendency to do that.
I closed my eyes through most of them.
Yeah, me too. Or washed my feet at the movie theater.
Did you know that that was one of the most profitable movies ever made, and it was on such a low budget that there are so many techniques used in that film to keep it low budget, but it was one of the most profitable movies ever made. And it's amazing when you look into some of the techniques that they use to produce that show. But we're not here to talk about the movie Halloween. We are here this morning on the Great Niagara County History Show to talk about Halloween this year, correct?
Yeah, well, the Halloween pass and old customs, and Anne Marie has some ghost stories. We're probably going to start with those.
Oh!
But we do want people to call in with their best Halloween memories, and also their favorite costume or favorite candies, or the candies that when you got home, you took out of the bag and you tried to push it on somebody else.
Yes, I remember many of an evening sitting in the living room carpet and sorting through things. Yep, that stays. Nope, you can have that.
A lot of trading going on.
433-1433 is the number to call to join in the fun here with the ladies. Again, Melissa Dunlap and Anne Marie Lineberry, they want to talk to you and have you share some stories, perhaps about your favoritest Halloween.
Okay. All right, we're going to let Anne Marie start with some ghost stories in Niagara County.
Well, first, I just want to say we get a lot of people who call the museum or stop in or email or contact us through Facebook because they believe that their house is haunted. And so they want to know something about the history of their house. And in most cases, you know, they're expecting to find that somebody was murdered there or some horrible thing happened there. And, you know, even going through the old newspapers, we usually can't find something that sensational. And then they'll ask, well, you know, could someone have died in my house? Well, if your house is old, chances are, yes, someone died in your house and probably was actually laid out in your house because, you know, back in the 19th, early 20th centuries, they didn't use funeral parlors so much. So people were laid out at home. So then when you tell somebody that, they're like, ooh, well, you know, that's the truth of it. So as I said, people will call in or, you know, text or, email and let us know about their house. So if anybody out there, you know, we're interested, we can't guarantee that we can find anything out about what happened in your house, but we are interested to know if, you know, if there are other things out there that we haven't heard about before.
We did have a group that came to the Bond House.
Yes. Oh, I remember. Oh, that's right, because you were sick, and so was Becky Pittler, and I ended up going, and I had a door slam on my back during the tour. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, I know. It scared the tweet out of you.
Yes, it did. It did. I mean, the doorway was open, and I'm standing in the doorway watching the people that were doing the ghost tour, and all of a sudden the door slammed and hit me in the back, so... And then another man fell down the stairs, but those stairs up to the third floor are pretty narrow.
Yeah, they're steep, yeah.
But he said somebody pushed him down the stairs, so, you know.
You never know.
You never know. Yes, wow. You never know. So, But most of the stories that I was going to relate, a lot of people already know them here in Niagara County, so I'll just kind of go through them briefly. Of course, the most famous story from Niagara County is the ghost of the headless soldier in the well at the French Castle at Fort Niagara. And the story is that there were two soldiers, and they were both vying for the attention of a lady. And one night, one of them challenged the other to a duel using swords. They started on the second floor of the French Castle and eventually ended up down the spiral stairs to the first floor. It's surprised if people who know those stairs, you're surprised not one or neither of, or both of them would have fallen down those stairs. But anyway, at the bottom of the stairs, the soldier who was facing backwards was stabbed through the heart and died, and the other soldier, fearing disciplinary action for killing a fellow soldier, decided to dismember him and throw his body into Lake Ontario. And he first severed the man's head and then threw it out a back window into the lake. As he was about to cut off the other limbs, he heard voices and footsteps coming down the stairs. He quickly threw the body in the well, which is in the French castle. And it is said that the headless ghost now roams the fort at night looking for his lost head. So there are other ghosts at the fort. William Morgan, who was the man that was kidnapped by the Masons and brought to the fort and held there and then disappeared from the fort, and nobody is exactly sure what happened to him. It is believed that he haunts the powder magazine at the fort because that's where he was kept before he disappeared. But he's also said, this is a ghost that gets around, because he is also said to haunt the Frontier House in Lewiston and Margin Manor in Appleton. So I guess he can't decide where to stay. Of course, the Frontier House in Lewiston, everybody knows about the Frontier House. Hopefully someday it will be restored. And it was built 1826, just after the Erie Canal was built, but it was still considered one of the best hotels west of New York City. And apparently Morgan was also brought to the Frontier House. Now, I've read stories where he was actually brought into the Frontier House, and then others that they just left him waiting in the carriage while some of the other men went into the Frontier House. But nonetheless, apparently his ghost haunts the Frontier House. And then, while on the topic of William Morgan, we'll just mention Margin Manor. This house was already haunted even before William Morgan story. It was the home of Sherbal Merritt and his family. It was built in 1854. It's on Lake Road in Appleton in Somerset. And Sherbal's wife, Sophia, died in the home in 1864. And his son, Louis, died there a year later. Sherbal died in 1881, and his two daughters inherited the property. Then it was sold to another man in 1895, Charles Ring. His wife died there in 1907. Charles died in 1908, and his stepmother-in-law, Farella, died also in 1908. The home actually went to Farella's sister, Estelle, and her husband. And they moved out in 1922, and the home was vacant for quite a while. And it was purchased by the Sisters of St. Joseph as a summer home for the nuns and the students from St. Mary's School for the Deaf in Buffalo. And the sisters owned the property for 60 years. And there were no reported deaths in the house while the sisters owned it, except for their dog, Duke. And in 2003, the property was bought by Margot Bittner and her husband for use as a winery, and it's called Margin Manor. The house is supposedly haunted by the ghosts of the Sherbal Merritt family, Charles and Hannah Ring, and Duke the dog. And the Bittners actually host ghost tours, and they have held seances in the house. The connection with William Morgan is supposedly on the property of Margin Manor. There's a stone that is supposed to have been the stone that they used to weigh Morgan down when they threw him into Lake Erie. They apparently rode, or, I'm sorry, Lake Ontario. Yes, I caught myself. They supposedly rode out into Lake Ontario from the fort, and they got about as far as where Margin Manor is now, put a stone on him, and threw him overboard. And apparently Morgan haunts the grounds of Margin Manor looking for his waitstone. Now, first of all, if the waitstone is on the bottom of Lake Ontario, how did it get up onto the shore of Margin Manor? And second of all, if someone threw you overboard with a waitstone, why would you come back looking for it? So I've always questioned that a little bit. So the other famous ghost story, of course, in Niagara County is the Van Horn Mansion. It was built in 1824 by James Van Horn. It was the home to his wife and nine children, including James Van Horn Jr. In 1836, James Jr. married his first wife, Melinda, and in January of 1837, she gave birth to a baby boy named after his father. Shortly after the birth, Melinda died and was buried in the family cemetery on the property, where the bodies were later removed to another cemetery. Melinda was somehow left behind, and her gravestone was lost. Years later, her gravestone was found and placed inside the home. Strange happenings were reportedly occurring in the house, and it was rumored that Melinda, unhappy about her missing gravestone and being left behind, haunted the mansion and the grounds. When the New Fate Historical Society took over the mansion, they found Melinda's remains through the use of, it was Bill Tolhurst.
Bill Tolhurst with his forensic dogs.
Dogs. Yep. Wow. They replaced her gravestone and the strange occurrences stopped. How Melinda died is a mystery, and there has been many questions about it. It seems that even in the family, nobody wanted to discuss Melinda's death. It was as if there was something nefarious about it, but James Horn eventually remarried. So
it was. We had a volunteer who volunteered for us for years, and he was a World War II navigator, and you know, had been a boxer, and just a really tough guy. And he used to volunteer at the Van Horn Mansion, and he said that stuff happened every time he was there. He said he really didn't want to be there alone, and other people that have volunteered here have had problems, but it's really calmed down since they moved her tombstone out of the living room.
Yes, yeah, out of the living room. It's in the Rose Garden now, yeah, which is where my husband and I got married.
Yes, yeah, so there you go.
Everything is fine. So. The Red Coach Inn was built in 1923, and it was designed to resemble an inn in England, and there's a story that in 1927, a man bludgeoned his wife to death in the bridal suite when they were on their honeymoon.
Oh, God.
It is said that it is her ghost that haunts the inn. Many guests have experienced strange phenomenon and have seen an apparition of a young woman in some of the rooms.
Now, is that the Red Coach in Niagara Falls?
In Niagara Falls, yes.
Okay,
yeah.
On Buffalo Avenue there, I think,
yes,
right?
Yes,
yeah, okay.
Yes.
Where the restaurant is, yeah.
Yeah. Also in Niagara Falls, there's the Echo Club. This home was built in about, well, depending on the source, 1885 or 1892. It was built by Thomas Welch, who was one of the most active promoters of Niagara Falls and persuaded the New York State Assembly to turn the area around Niagara Falls into the state park. In 1919, it was sold to Alexander Zielinski, a Polish immigrant who later became president of the Niagara Falls National Bank. It has been reported that he had cells in the basement to imprison people who could not pay their debts, even though, of course, imprisonment for debt in New York State had been abolished in about 1830. But in 1931, it was sold to the Echo Society, which was a Polish social club, and they had it until 2008. It is now a privately owned home. There are stories about several famous people visiting the home, club. President McKinley, Woodrow Wilson, Marilyn Monroe, Pope John Paul II. And there are several different ghosts said to haunt the club, including Mr. Zielinski and a little girl who has not been identified.
Hmm.
Also here in Lockport, it's said that the Keenan Center is also haunted. Although there's no specific ghost, all it says is that there are several ghosts that's said to haunt the house, including a young boy, and visitors have seen apparitions and strange white lights.
Hmm.
In at Niagara University. It was originally called Our Lady of the Angels Seminary. It was founded in 1856 by the Venetian fathers, and it started out as a seminary for the training of priests. But originally, it had been part of an old tavern called the Halfway House. But in 1862, one of the new buildings that had been built for the seminary was built on the same spot as the old tavern, but it burned down 2 years later. And one of the seminarians, Thomas Hopkins, was killed in the fire. And it is believed that his ghost haunts the building that is now called Cleet Hall.
Yeah, it's Cleet.
This stone building was completed in September of the original building burned down. This new one was built in 1865. But it said that even though the original building is gone, that Thomas Hopkins haunts the current building that is there. And then the road near Cold Spring Cemetery is supposed to be haunted as well. There are supposedly 12 War of 1812 soldiers buried there. But there's also a ghost of a young girl who they say was murdered nearby while she was hitchhiking, and many people have claimed to see her. And then just one more. And this one isn't in Niagara County. This one is just over the border into Orleans County in Ridgeway. And it is called the largest cobblestone building in America. It was an inn. It was known as the Spencer House and then later as the Cobblestone Inn. It was built in 1837. It has 22 rooms.
That's the one on 104?
104, yeah. I should have mentioned that. Ridge Road, 104, yes. Apparently, it was a stop on the Underground Railroad, but it apparently is haunted now. And I read an article about that some of the ghosts that are supposedly there are not, let's say, benevolent. They're malevolent ghosts, and I don't know if anyone is living there now. Maybe Bob King would know that down in that area. But apparently a lot of people have been driven out of that house by the occurrences that have happened here.
That's a huge building.
Yes,
really,
it is.
Really neat.
Now, where on 104 is that?
It's just over the border from Niagara County into Orleans County in Ridgeway. So,
I mean, it's really noticeable. It's so big.
Yeah, it's right on a corner. And it's very, very, well, it's, that is the largest cobblestone building in North America.
I believe that, yeah.
Wow, that's great stuff there, Anne Marie.
Well,
we appreciate
we kind of
you.
Galloped through that, so
yeah, okay. That's okay.
I'll give Melissa a chance now, and maybe people can call in about Halloween.
Yeah,
I was going to say when I was a kid, I went to school in Kenmore, and on Halloween, you would go to the school, and they would give you like little milk cartons, paper milk cartons, but they were for UNICEF. So when you went around and trick or treated, people put pennies in these little.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember
boxes.
That too.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And so you got, and the other thing was when you got back with your full little thing, that you got cider and powdered donuts because my mother never bought powdered donuts, right? So that was really a treat. Then they would open all the things and they would count the pennies into the rolls, you know, and stuff. So, and it was fun because it was everybody in the cafeteria and you all had your costumes on and it was a fun thing. And I can remember too on Halloween crying. Because the costume didn't fit over your snowsuit.
Right.
And you had to put the jacket on over the costume.
And that hid your costume. And what was the point?
That was right.
Yeah.
And my mother was adamant that the coat was going to stay on.
Now, you see, from the boy's perspective, no coat. It was the costume and sort of ignore mom's directions and just go out trick-or-treating without the coat on.
Yeah, so. It was just kind of, well, and the other thing was the principal of my elementary school. Lived on my block. The Andersons lived on my block. The original Andersons from Anderson's ice cream.
Yeah.
So the principal lived on the block. So what he would do, and I begged my mother every year, do I have to go to their house? And he would make you sit on the couch, and they would make popcorn balls, and then he would question you the entire time.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
Supposed to be a fun night.
It was
being interrogated.
It was terrible. And my mother, you know... I mean, she was a school secretary, not in that school, But my sister was later on. That was kind of neat. But she was a school secretary, and so, you know, she would always talk to the different principals, so she would know if you stopped or not.
Wow.
And nobody ate those popcorn balls either.
Nope.
That was the other thing.
Hang them a couple of months later, hang them on the Christmas tree.
There you go.
Yeah.
That would have worked. Yeah. So those are my Halloween memories.
Well, my mother, my father usually worked the 3 to 11 shift, so he wasn't home on Halloween, but my mother, before my brother and I could eat anything, she had to inspect it.
Oh, yeah.
And this was even before all of, this was like in the late 60s into the early 70s, even before all of those tampering scares,
yep,
and everything. But my mother always went through the candy before my brother and I could eat it. So,
well, she wanted to make sure,
yes,
that you two,
yes,
were safe.
Yep. Safe, yes.
That's right.
Yeah. So it is the Great History Show here in Niagara County. And if you would like to get in and share some of your stories in the conversation here, feel free to do so at 433-1433. Of course, each month, the second Wednesday of every month, we have the Niagara County Historical Society here, the Executive Director, Melissa Dunlap, and Assistant Director, Anne Marie Lineberry. 433-1433. It's kind of nice to have this little eerie setting here, isn't it? Oh, by the way, I did put my mask on for you this morning. So, is it scary enough?
We could go back to Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, I have that here somewhere. But did you know Rod Serling was from Syracuse, right?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was born and raised in Syracuse. And he actually, when he passed away, I think it was 1950. Or I can't remember the year he passed away, but it was in Rochester, and he's actually interned in a just outside of Rochester, a cemetery.
Oh, okay.
There,
yeah.
My husband was at Syracuse University, and apparently he came there and spoke, and apparently he was a spokesman for Utica Club beer.
Oh,
and
really?
So somebody gave him one at the program, and he spit it out. This is a story my husband tells anyway, and he. So.
Well, I'm gonna have to share that tomorrow morning with Hank Nevins, because he keeps track of all of the I won't say obscure, but the smaller label, mm-hmm, brews around, yeah, at Utica Club and others. So.
Don't you remember that, yeah, they had Schultz and Dooley?
Yeah.
They had all the mugs, and then there was one that was like a policeman.
Mm.
Or a sheriff, what was his name? Oh, gosh, that's really going back. I could.
That's probably before my time.
I could sing the Mabel Black Label song, but no.
I have a story about that, but I won't share it on the radio.
Okay. All right, so interestingly enough, Skittles are the top Halloween candy. And not chocolate. It says the bite-sized fruit candies outranked M&M's, Snickers, and Reese's Cups, according to 11 years of sales data from candystore.com. And even though candy corn made the top 10, and I'm one of the few people that likes candy corn, the tricolored treats also ranked among the worst Halloween candies, according to candystore.com. No wonder post-trick-or-treating candy trays get so heated. But it's hard for me to believe that Reese's peanut butter cups are not number one. I mean, they're number one in my family.
Yeah.
So, Harry Houdini died on Halloween in 1926. The famous magician, illusionist, and entertainer died from peritonitis caused by a ruptured appendix. And there's two different theories. One is that his appendix ruptured, and the other is that a student punched him in the stomach with his permission that caused his appendix to burst. So, I don't know if that's true or not. Princesses and superheroes rank as the most popular kids' costumes. Well, I can attest to that.
So, did your princess costume fit over the coat or not?
Sometimes it did, and sometimes it didn't.
Oh, okay.
But you remember they had those masks, and they had the elastic thing.
Oh,
you had, like,
oh yeah.
Those little
plastic
metal
ones, yeah.
The little metal chips. And you couldn't see, and you couldn't breathe.
Yeah. But that didn't matter. So.
No,
Do you remember the plastic masks that were like a half a face, but one of them had a bee?
No.
Do you remember the bee on the side of the cheek? I forget what the context of the costume was, it's like, it just looked weird.
Yeah. But those half masks. Well, that was a big thing, those masks. And because I used to always talk about, you know, make sure that you could see and everything, and that you could hardly see. They were like little slits. And
yeah,
sometimes my mother made the hole bigger.
Bigger, yeah.
But,
and I'm sure those nylon costumes were fireproof, too.
Yeah. That's the other thing. So still, because now my grandchildren always want to be princesses or superheroes. And there are some really ingenious costumes that I've seen that people have made. I mean, there's people that are really into Halloween and think about it for months. And I have a daughter-in-law that does that. She dresses my son also. Usually, you know, like one year they were Buttercup and from Princess Bride. And he was, I can't think of a thing. I can think of Jack Sparrow, but that's not right. I can't think of what the guy's name was. He was the captain of the ship. Oh, the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But things like that. So there's a lot of things. Okay, the fastest pumpkin carving took only 16.47 seconds. Stephen Clark of New York holds the Guinness Book of World Records, having carved his speed lantern in October 2013. In order to nab the title, the jack-o'-lantern had to contain a complete face, including eyes, nose, mouth, and ears. No word on what the face's expression had to be. New York City throws the biggest Halloween parade. Well, I can believe that.
Are Halloween parades big?
Well, it says at an average year, the event draws more than 2 million spectators and includes thousands of participants joining in the route along the way. And all began as a brainchild of Greenwich Village resident puppeteer Ralford Lee, who just wanted to throw a whimsical walk from house to house for his kids and their pals. When a local theater got wind of it, they joined in and grew the event. It's gotten even bigger, more creative, and more theatrical ever since.
Hmm.
Okay. Well, there you go. I'm surprised we don't have one in Buffalo. A city in Canada banned teens over 16 from trick-or-treating. According to the CBC, anyone over the age of 16 caught trick-or-treating in Bathurst, Canada, faces up to a $200 fine. The city has a curfew for everyone, so those under 16 aren't allowed out after 8 p.m. on Halloween, and the rules were instituted to curtail after-dark mischief and a rash of pranks.
No, on Halloween night? I don't believe that would happen.
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you were over 16 and you were caught trick-or-treating...
Well, that was when people said to you, aren't you too old for this?
I just heard that the other night, as a matter of fact. Oh, no.
When I turned 12, I think that was the last year that I trick-or-treated. And then after that, you know, we considered it childish to trick-or-treat once you got past, like, the age of 12. But now... You know, all the kids go out until they're 20, you know.
Well, my mother, 12 was the end of all the things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty average age, at least in our family. It was about the same thing.
Mm-hmm. But then you went to parties after that.
Yeah.
You know, you went to Halloween parties and you avoided the dunking for apples so that nobody pushed your face into the water.
Yeah. Or in much later years... when mom and dad were still around and they had plans for that night, it's like, John, can you come over and give out the candy at our house tonight, you know, so that they could go out and, you know, do their thing. And so, you know, happily sat there with a bucket of candy at the front door. And
I hardly get anybody anymore.
I know. We don't either.
Yeah. It's because, I'm on a busier road, but behind us.
And I'm out in sticks.
Yeah. So. There's a lot of trick-or-treating. Well, my kids used to go, I had friends that lived on the inside of the complex, so they used to call me and say, do you have any bags of candy left? Because I'm out. You know, they'd have like 200 kids. So I drive my candy over there.
Yeah.
So it says Illinois produces up to 5 times more pumpkins than any other state.
Wow.
If you're in the market for a truly destination-worthy pumpkin patch, look in the heartland. The land of Lincoln has more than 15,000 acres devoted to gourd growing, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Those Illinois farms typically grow more than 500 million pounds of pumpkins annually. Wow. That must not smell good when they...
Now, have you two ever gone down to that pumpkin farm down on Main Street in Clarence?
Yes.
I was just there about a week or two ago,
They usually have the annual contest for the largest or the biggest pumpkin.
Yeah, they just had it.
I think a couple of years ago, it was like well over a ton.
Yeah.
It was 2,000 some pounds, I think we'll say. And I can't imagine how you grow something like that.
I guess, I don't know. And then they have the pumpkin slinging where they.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The catapults.
Yeah. Now that would be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Halloween is the second largest commercial holiday in the country. I believe that. Yeah. You know. People.
Okay. So where did that come from? Because it wasn't always that way.
I don't know how it got so popular. It was originally, let's see, I've got this stuff. The Halloween dates back 2,000 years. It's even older than Christianity itself. It all started as a pre-Christian Celtic festival called Samhain, which means summer's end, held around the 1st of November. The priest recognized the final day of the fall harvest and spirits crossing over, since they believed that the veil between the living and the spirit world were thinnest at that time. People in Ireland, the United Kingdom, and northern France used to ward off ghosts by lighting sacrificial bonfires, and you guessed it, wearing costumes.
Yeah, so that the bad spirits couldn't find you. Yeah.
And back then, trick-or-treating existed since medieval times. It says back then it was known as guising in Scotland and Ireland. Young people dressed up in costumes and went door-to-door looking for food or money in exchange for songs, poems, or other tricks they performed. Today, the tradition has morphed into children to getting dressed up and asking for candy. Hardly anyone performs for their candy these days. A simple thank you will do. So,
and the Irish would carve turnips. They didn't.
Yes.
They didn't use pumpkins. So when the Irish came here, they adopted the pumpkin. So that's,
yeah, it says turnips, potatoes, and beets.
Yeah.
Were originally used. And then it said also that there's a Halloween bread in Ireland. It's called Brambach, or just Brock. The sweet loaf typically contains dark and golden raisins, as well as a small hidden toy or ring. It sounds a little bit like New Orleans.
Yeah.
I want to know, how do you carve a face out of a beet?
Maybe they had a big one.
Apparently, yeah.
It says, similar to the classic king cake of Mardi Gras, tradition dictates that the person who finds the item will come into good fortune in the coming year. Okay, now let me see if I can find. I've got all these pages out of order because it's talking about Disney's Hocus Pocus.
Oh my God, that's Aaron's favorite movie. That's my daughter's favorite movie.
And there's so many people that's like a cult classic.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And yet, when it came out, it you know, really didn't do terribly well at the box office. But now it's
I think a lot of productions started out that way, and then over the years they sort of caught on and developed their own cult following. And while Melissa is trying to get organized there, we'll just remind everybody that this is the Niagara County History Show on WLVL. 433-1433 is the number to call if you would like to get in on the conversation, perhaps share a Halloween story, maybe a tradition or something like that. Whoop. All right. So, and we have here today, of course, Melissa Dunlap, the Executive Director of the Niagara County Historical Society, and Anne Marie Linneberry, the Assistant Director. Ladies, are you ready for a call?
Sure. We're ready anytime.
Good morning. You're on the History Show on WLVL.
Ooh, this is a ghost calling. I grew up in Anoka, Minnesota, part of my life, and it is considered the first city that actually had celebrated Halloween, I guess. But anyway, it's considered the Halloween capital of the world.
Oh, wow. Ah.
What year was that? What year did they start celebrating? Do you remember?
You know what? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
For me, I think. I lived there from, in the mid-60s. Till we moved into Anoka in 59, the fall, and we didn't, we moved out in 67. But, we would get out of school early and go dress, and we had those masks. I had one that was a frog, and my mother refused to buy a costume or make one, so I had to wear a green dress. But I had that mask on with the elastic in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody laughed at me. Oh, yeah.
Well.
Oh, gosh. But when you're a kid, that's a thing. Because everybody wants a costume.
And my sister and her daughter, well, I guess, I don't know how they got they must have something special there this year, but she's actually going there this year to celebrate. She lives about 5 hours away from there, I guess.
Oh,
they have a big Halloween celebration?
Oh, yeah.
I'll have to tell my daughter because she's really into Halloween.
Yep. So I just thought I wanted to share that.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yep.
Okay.
Look it up. It's A-N-O-K-A.
Okay. So. Minnesota, right?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Anoka.
Yeah.
A-N-O-K-A.
Okay. Monster Mash once reigned supreme on Billboard charts. Bobby Boris Pickett reached number one on the Hit 100 in 1962, just before Halloween, and later recharted in 1973. But this time in August, you might say it even was a graveyard smash. It says, all right, so this one is the Mike Myers mask in Halloween has a fascinating backstory. The famous horror movie villain comes from a surprisingly innocent roots. When shooting the original 1978 film, production designer Tommy Lee Wallace picked up two masks from a Halloween Boulevard magic shop, a clown mask and William Shatner as a Captain Kirk in Star Trek. Tommy came in with a clown mask on and went, ooh, that's kind of scary. Then he put on the Shatner mask and he stopped dead and said, it's perfect. Actor Nick Castle told the New York Times, they spray painted it white, cut the whole eyes bigger, and the rest is spine-tingling history.
All right, now that was Michael Myers from Halloween.
Right.
And just a couple of side notes here for you, Melissa and Anne-Marie. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the budget for that film was very, very low. And what they did, they filmed it in Southern California, but the setting of the movie was in the Midwest, in Haddonfield, Illinois, a made-up town.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fall, obviously the end of October, and they needed to make the outside, you know, scenes look like it was fall in the Midwest, but they're out on, you know, the West Coast. They're out in California.
Yeah.
So they bought a bunch of dried fallen leaves, and what they did was they laid them down in the set wherever they were shooting, and when they moved to the next set or to the next shoot, they bagged up all those leaves and moved them. They didn't have enough money to buy enough leaves.
Yeah.
You know, so they just carted them from scene to scene and used them so that it could look. And if you look closely in some of the outdoor scenes in that movie, you can actually see a couple of palm trees here and there. So, but one of my favorite gaffes, I guess, in that or mistakes was on the scene. There's a couple of scenes where young Michael is outside the house. He's walking around the porch. And he's heading towards the kitchen to grab the knife, of course. And when you look at the porch, you can see all the camera and mic cables laid out on the porch. So, you know, somebody wasn't, doing their job to keep all of the...
My son always picks those up, those anachronisms. And then, do you remember, it was a while ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, Hallmark came here. And they used one of the houses.
Oh, over on Locust Street.
Yeah, they used
across
one of the
from
house,
the high school.
Yeah, for a commercial.
Yeah, it was in the middle of July, I think.
Right,
and it was for snow.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they did it. And also, when you look at A Christmas Story, that movie,
mm-hmm.
you can see, you know, I mean, you can see that they've frozen, you know, put ice on the trees and everything
else.
Oh,
yeah.
But then, like, when he's looking out the window, you can see, like, the yard behind it.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And Hallmark movies are famous for that. I think they just have blocks of something that they put in that's supposed to look like ice. Because they'll be standing outside, supposedly in the middle of winter, and they'll have this long conversation and everything. And you're thinking, the girl will run out of the house and she's got like a sleeveless dress on and everything, and they're out there for 20 minutes in what's supposedly freezing cold. And you're thinking,
yeah.
So, oh my gosh.
Well, if you want to just real quick, another mistake. I remember this one came out. The movie. I can't even think of the name now. I'm sorry. I was I had it on the tip of my tongue here.
Oh, gosh. Don't even tell me.
Was it a Halloween movie?
I don't think so. Okay. Was it Die Hard? Anyways.
Well, they think that's a Christmas movie. My kids convince me every year that that's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, well, anyways, one of the scenes, now the film was shot in California, okay? But one of the scenes was supposed to be one of the airports in Washington, mm-hmm. Dulles Airport, I think, or maybe Reagan Airport. And there was a close-up of a payphone, and it had Pactel on it. Pacific Telephone.
Yeah.
So
you know right there.
Well, there was a movie, Three Men and a Baby.
Oh,
that
I
was
love that
up.
One.
And apparently in one of the scenes, there's supposed to be a ghost in the window. Like, there's a window behind in the scene, and supposedly there's a ghost in the window.
Ah.
I mean, I've heard that.
I
so.
Have to look. All right, so it says Keene, New Hampshire, and Colonel Bond was from Keene, New Hampshire, holds the record for the most jack-o'-lanterns on display. In October 2013, the city broke the record with 30,581 lit pumpkins displayed around town. Talk about lighting up the night.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I know they did like a, I think it was called the Haunted Hollow or something here in Lockport, but down in Tarrytown, well, actually it's in... It's on the Hudson, but it's in another town, but it's near Tarrytown. But they do the jack-o'-lantern blaze, and we were there a few years ago. It was just absolutely incredible. I mean, I'd love to go back again. And there were just thousands and thousands and thousands of pumpkins.
All lit up.
All lit up, and they
any
had walkways.
Beats?
And no beats. But it was just fascinating. So,
okay, so some shelters used to suspend black cat adoptions for Halloween. They feared that animals were in danger from satanic cults that wanted them for nefarious purposes in the days leading up to Halloween. Now, those shelters have gone in the opposite direction. Many even promote black cat adoptions in October because the pre-adoption screening and interview process to weed out anyone with the wrong intentions. There you go. I have a black cat. She is the most afraid cat I have ever owned.
Well, ours is a tuxedo cat, but he's also a scaredy cat as well. He hides from everything.
Everything. So William Shatner should have shot up in space today.
Yeah, by now.
Yeah, that's right. It was delayed yesterday.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, he was all excited about doing it.
Well, good for him.
Says most Americans spend on candy, decorations, and costumes. Many of us put our money where our mouth is when it comes to loving Halloween. The largest share goes towards candy, with 95% putting it in their carts, 75% planning on buying decorations, and 65% shopping for costumes. Overall, Americans spend an average of $1,048 on winter holidays in 2019. If you're wondering why we all tighten our belts in January, that must include Christmas, too, I would think.
Yeah. I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not buying $1,000 worth of candy.
Oh, maybe the day after when it's all on sale.
Yeah.
I always buy some I don't like so that I don't eat it all. And then I always buy a bag or two just in case people don't come to the door.
Mm. Yeah.
Reese's peanut butter cups, right?
Yes, that's one of the first things. So... it says the Irish also brought us jack-o'-lanterns. As the story goes, an Irish man named Stingy Jack tricked the devil and therefore was not allowed into heaven or hell. So he spent his days roaming the earth carrying a lantern and went by Jack of the Lantern. Try not to get goosebumps when you carve up your own pumpkins this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wonder, I bet Hocus Pocus is probably the most watched nonviolent.
There's a Hocus Pocus tour in Salem. My daughter was in Salem earlier this year, and they have a Hocus Pocus tour, and they go to the different sites that were in the movie. So it has become very popular. They're making now Hocus Pocus 2, which is supposed to come out, I think, next year. So
it says sugar rationing during World War II halted trick-or-treating. Because of the shortage of sweet stuff, trick-or-treating wasn't as big a deal during World War II. After the rationing ended, it was all systems go on the candy-collecting front. Candy companies began launching advertising campaigns to cash in on the ritual and make sure kids were clamoring for their products to show up in candy buckets and spare pillowcases.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Well, that's been a very fun show, ladies.
Well, thank you.
And so we will... wrap things up here. Melissa Dunlap and Anne-Marie Lindenberry from the Niagara County Historical Society. Thank you for bringing these memories back to us today.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right. And
Happy Halloween.
Yep.
We will talk to you real soon. On behalf of those of us here at WLVL, we thank you for tuning in to the Niagara County Historical Society's monthly program right here on 1340 AM, 105.3 FM, and streaming worldwide at WLVL.com.
Hometown 1340 AM and 105.3 FM.
WLVL, La Pointe.
FM translator W287 CV.